to meet our host is by Dr. James Evans, who is on the faculty of the Colgate Rochester Divinity School in Theology. Some of you may remember Jim from last year when he wrote a book for us that he was reviewing. And the review was better than the book. But I'm very pleased to have Jim as our first presenter tonight. And the opening of our session of the annual meeting. The respondent tonight is Dr. Cornell West, who is on the faculty at Union Theological Seminary in New York City. And I'm just going to let these two guys go for themselves.
When I was asked to give this paper, Dr. Rooks made the instructions very explicit to deal with the problem of method, structure, and content for black theologians, which was very fortunate because it addressed some of the questions that I had been thinking about anyway, and so it was not too difficult to start to write the paper. Difficulty came in finishing it. I kept writing, and I talked to my colleague, Dr. Wilmore, and every time he'd ask me, I said, well, it's longer than it was yesterday, and so the question of when to stop, but I think I've got it in shape to present to you tonight. The title of the paper is The Generic Structure of Afro-American Theology. Afro-American theology is facing a crucial period in its development. The external dramas and confrontations which marked its most recent articulation in the 1960s and early 70s have changed. The reasons for these changes are both internal and external. From the outside, the situation of racial oppression which compelled the black religionists of that period to reassess the meaning of the Christian message for Afro-Americans has not appreciably diminished. In fact, that oppression is perhaps more devastating today than it was then. What has changed is the face and form of that oppression. That oppression has become internalized and institutionalized within American society to the extent that the dramas and confrontations have become a game of hide and seek. From the inside, Afro-American theology has not changed its focus on the liberating message of Christ. This focus is the uniqueness and power of black theology. This is what makes Afro-American theology Christian theology. What has changed is the number of ways that Afro-American theologians affirm this focus on liberation. These changes have brought Afro-American theology to a crossroad in its developmental sojourn. The danger which threatens our enterprise is that this situation, if unexamined, may become one of crisis. If we stand at the crossroads too long, stagnation may set in. There are many signs that this is already happening. The number of books and treatises which treat Afro-American theology has decreased dramatically since those early days. This fact suggests that there is some disarray among black theologians in America. It also suggests that there possibly reigns a confusion that is no longer creative. A second sign is the magnitude and persistence of crucial questions which are asked by students, pastors, and others to which we have yet to provide satisfactory answers. Students ask, for instance, is black theology concerned with questions of ultimate truth? Pastors, on the other hand, ask, does black theology, with its radical assertion about the meaning of the gospel, have anything to do with the proclamation of the black churches? Other Afro-Americans, both within and without the churches, ask, does black theology deal in a concrete way with the socio-political issues which confront Afro-Americans? These questions point to the need for a clear and concise identification and justification of the task of Afro-American theology at the present time. Once the tasks of black theology are clearly seen, we may then address the issues of method, structure, and content as they relate to each. What we need, then, is a kind of encyclopedia of Afro-American theology. That is, a comprehensive understanding of its scope and task, so that we might answer the question, where do we go from here? Such an understanding would enable us to, one, describe and examine the essential nature of the Afro-American theological enterprise. Two, examine and articulate the ways in which that enterprise is related to the Afro-American churches. Three, to articulate and live out the praxeological aspects of that enterprise in the global socio-political context. This need to categorize the tasks and functions of Afro-American theology is heightened by the increased diversity and complexity of religious affirmation in the Afro-American community, as well as by the ever more subtle racist structures which circumscribe that community. We need to understand this complexity in relation to the teaching and learning which affects Afro-American students in the seminaries, in relation to the proclamation of the Afro-American churches, and in relation to the affirmation of our sisters and brothers in Africa and Christians engaged in the liberation struggle throughout the world. Afro-American theology needs a point of orientation so that the similarities and distinctions between all of these important tasks may be assessed. Such an orientation is crucial if Afro-American theology is not to flounder amidst the quagmire of racism, oppression, and false religious affirmation in the contemporary world. The important issue here is from where and how we are to derive that point of orientation. What kind of organizational structure will we use to clarify the task of Afro-American theology? I am prepared to argue that there is already present within our own cultural heritage, and that heritage out of which Afro-American theology emerges, a principle of order, and that our task is to identify it and employ it in our examination of the problems of method, structure, and content which confront us. This principle will not only allow us to articulate the inner consistency of Afro-American theology, but will also render moot some of the challenges which have been presented from the outside. The principle of which I speak is the generic principle. I have briefly hinted at three distinct tasks of Afro-American theology. The first addresses the problem of self-examination and the quest for ultimate truth. The second addresses the problem of its relation to the proclamation of the churches. And the third addresses the problem of its relations to the socio-political analysis and praxis in the global context. These tasks represent three genres within the literature of Afro-American theology. An analysis of the task of Afro-American theology as genres will allow us to orderly and systematically address the important issues of structure, method, and content as they manifest themselves to the contemporary Afro-American theologian. The first of these genres that I'd like to look at is related to that first task of self-examination and the quest for ultimate truth. The first task of Afro-American theology is related to what is called in Anglo-American and European theology as fundamental or philosophical theology. Fundamental or philosophical theology has traditionally taken two distinct forms. The first is the quest for an understanding of the relationship between theology and universal truth. For David Tracy, for instance, out of Chicago, the role of fundamental theology is to assess the adequacy of the truth claims of theology. This is accomplished by formulating arguments for such truth claims which are, quote, in harmony with the rules of argument usually articulated in a particular philosophical approach, end of quote. Thus, fundamental theology seeks to assess the adequacy of such claims through rational argument, honest, free, critical inquiry, and without the interventions of personal faith. John McQuarrie, on the other hand, views the role of philosophical theology as follows. It lays bare the fundamental concepts of theology and investigates the conditions that make any theology possible. In doing so, it also provides a defense of theology against its detractors, by showing that theology can claim to have foundations in the universal structures of human existence and experience. Now, both Tracy and Macquarie, along with Pannenberg and Schleiermacher, emphasize this first division of theology as the quest for some universal truth. The second way that fundamental theology has been understood is as that division which assesses the inner coherence of all theology, the criteria for such an assessment being a particular understanding of the Word of God. For Gerhard Eberle, fundamental theology asks how well theology as a whole is performing the task assigned to it. It deals with the questions of the truth of theology and the process by which theology verifies in its own intrinsic truth. It establishes the limits of theology. It addresses the complexity of the study of theology in relation to the complex manifestation of the Word of God in the life of the theologian. Quote, says Evelyn, in a manner of speaking, fundamental theology is the study of the musical score of theology. End of quote. Karl Barth addresses the same kind of question in his Evangelical Theology. He seeks to show how theology itself as a science derives its structure from the gospel of God. Now, both Eberling and Barth stress the fundamental theological task as self-examination. Afro-American theologians can learn much from these ways of construing the task of fundamental theology, but their deficiencies must be recognized. We must ask whether or not traditional Western philosophical concepts are adequate for our search for truth. We also must ask whether or not insular internal critique is an adequate avenue for our own self-understanding as Afro-American theologians. These questions are addressed to contemporary Black theologians from within our ranks and from without our ranks. From the outside, there's the question which is raised most consistently by process theologians such as Schubert Aga. That is, why does Afro-American theology ignore the questions of ultimate truth? This reluctance to spend a great deal of time in philosophical debate points to what he calls an overemphasis on homocentrism in theology to the detriment of theocentrism. That is, the concern for liberation from physical bondage overshadows the ultimate concern of theology. Ogden's argument has been ably refuted by James Cone and others. However, the appearance of the question itself points to the distinctive task of Afro-American fundamental theology. From within, there is the question which was raised so poignantly by William R. Jones. And that question is, why do Black theologians resist thorough and critical self-examination in relation to their task? Jones calls Afro-American theologians to examine their presuppositions about God in the light of Black suffering. Black suffering stands in flat contradiction to the idea of a benevolent and powerful God. Jones' critique is passionate, and it has stirred the thinking of Afro-American theologians. Yet I would posit that both the critique of Ogden and Jones have two major flaws. First, I think that both are rather uncritical in their acceptance of Western philosophical categories as conduits of truth. Second, I think that Ogden has no appreciation whatsoever of the autobiographical structure, content, and method of Afro-American theological thought. He has not addressed this at all. Jones has said in the introduction to his book that his autobiographical background in the Black church has provided the arena for the questions which he asks, but he doesn't say that they provide the answers to those questions. Thus, Afro-American fundamental theology cannot employ traditional philosophical concepts in its quest for truth, nor can it settle for its own isolated truth through ascetic self-scrutiny. Truth is found neither solely in self-scrutiny, nor solely in the pursuit of the disembodied idea. There are three basic questions which I think inform Afro-American fundamental theology, and a brief overview of these questions in relation to the problems of structure, content, and method which confront Afro-American fundamental theology will help us to see more clearly the outlines of the task which lay before us. The problem of structure in Afro-American fundamental theology is best expressed in the question, what is the character of Black theology? This question is concerned with what makes it Black and what makes it theology. This concern forms the central issue for Black theology in the view of Cecil Cone. For Cecil Cone, Afro-American theologians must address the issue of the character or identity of Black theology, especially in relation to its academic setting, and the socio-political ramifications of its point of departure. What kind of intellectual enterprise is the study of Afro-American theology? How does it receive its impetus? More important, however, is the question of a structure through which these questions can be approached. I am suggesting that the structure for addressing the questions of Afro-American fundamental theology ought to be a personal or autobiographical one. Thus, our search for an answer to the question, what is black theology, includes both the meaning of blackness and the meaning of theology. We must note, however, that in black autobiography, the meaning of humanity is never fully comprehended apart from the meaning of blackness. As a matter of fact, it is through the meaning of blackness that autobiographical writers come to understand what humanity is. This means that for Afro-American fundamental theology, we cannot come to an understanding of the meaning of theology apart from the meaning of our blackness. It is this socio-political reality with its ontological significance which provides the personal structure for our search. The issue of method in Afro-American fundamental theology is best expressed in the question, what does it mean to be a black theologian? This question involves the effect of the task upon the person. The crux of this question has to do with vocation. To claim to be an Afro-American theologian entails, in some sense, not only a vocational decision, but also a vocational response. One's vocation is one's calling. Questions of theological method cannot be addressed adequately apart from a consideration of the vocational aspects of Afro-American theology. How are we to understand theology in the light of our calling to the task of theology? More important, however, how does our understanding of our vocation set our agenda and influence our methodologies? These are the questions which I think ought to constitute this task of fundamental theology. Black theologians must ask, what does it mean to be a black theologian? And throughout that question, search for methodological patterns of God's will in our call to be theologians. The content of Afro-American fundamental theology. The issue of content in Afro-American fundamental theology is best expressed in the question, what is the place of black theology? This question has to do with the place of theology in the academy. In this respect, it is the attempt to determine the place of theology in Afro-American intellectual life. In like manner, it also addresses the issue of the place of theology in the life of the theologian. These issues are the content of Afro-American fundamental theology. One cannot, however, address the issue of the place of theology in the life of the Afro-American thinker without addressing at the same time the Afro-American's search for a place. Thus, the autobiographical question, where do I belong, is part of the content of Afro-American fundamental theology. Charles Long, in a recent article, addressed this issue of place in Afro-American theological thought. Quote, the topos for the black American is not a land, but a place defined as a legal socio-political relationship. And thus, the notion of being in one's place for the black American always defines an inferior legal status. Black American theological thought thus tends to be utopian in its orientation, seeking a proper place, place here including also land where the black will not be an alien, end of quote. An understanding of the quest for a place within Afro-American theology is the avenue to an understanding of the place of theology within the life of the theologian. Thus, the questions that form the content of Afro-American fundamental theology are, for instance, what is the place of theology in the public life of James Cone when he states that he wrote Black Theology and Black Power, quote, in the expectation that my own existence will be clarified? Or, on the other hand, what does it mean when J.D. Otis Roberts states that he, quote, takes his stand within the Christian theological circle, end of quote? Now, these are questions of place, locus, topos, which address the question of the place of the black theologian as well as the place of black theology. They lead us to the content of Afro-American fundamental theology, which is the word of God as personal experience. In this brief overview of fundamental theology, I have suggested some of the ways that the quest for self-understanding and the quest for truth might be expedited by employing an autobiographical approach. It needs to be said, however, that historically many theorists have expressed reservations about the adequacy of autobiography in the quest for truth. Benedetto Croce, for instance, called autobiography, quote, a byproduct of an egotism and a self-consciousness which achieves nothing but to render obvious their own futility and should be left to die of it, end of quote. Another scholar of black autobiography states, admittedly, the autobiography has limitations as a vehicle of truth. These reservations about the inadequacies of the autobiographical quest for understanding are not easily dismissed. Yet it is the most constructive way to comprehend the task of fundamental theology for the Afro-American, especially in relation to structure, content, and method. For both the persona of black autobiography and the character of Afro-American fundamental theology are firmly grounded in the cultural, socio-political context out of which they emerge. At the same time, they both tried to discover some universal significance within that context, seeking the truth, which is both an internal and an external reality. Now I'd like to move on to consider the second task of Afro-American theology. The second task of Afro-American theology is related to what is called in Anglo-American and European theology, systematic or dogmatic theology. Now, this type of theology has traditionally also taken two distinct forms. The first is the quest for an understanding of the relationship between the proclamation of the church and ultimate reality. The avenue to this understanding is the interpretation or the rational systemization of the symbols of the Christian faith. John McQuarrie describes this division of theology as the unfolding and interpretation of the great symbols and images in which the revealed truths of faith are set forth, in the book. Tracy describes systematic theology as a hermeneutical activity which interprets the religious classics of the Christian faith in order to uncover within them, quote, the whole of reality, end of quote. This activity is systematic because system is the attempt to achieve a form of rough coherence among the classical symbols of the Christian faith. Both Tracy and McQuarrie emphasize the task of relating the Christian faith, or more precisely, the church's proclamation regarding its faith, to the whole of reality. The second way that this division of theology has been understood is as that which relates the proclamation of the church to the reality of God, specifically God as revealed in Scripture. The avenue to this understanding is the guidance provided by Scripture itself. Thus, Evelyn states that dogmatic is concerned with the certainty of faith and is guided by the inner logic of the subject matter itself. Therefore, dogmatic statements cannot be harmonized into a system. Indeed, the principal structural question in dogmatics is how to make allowance so that the compulsion to an ordered sequence of whatever kind does not hinder the insight into the coherence and interrelatedness that unites everything in the development of dogmatic statements. Karl Barth states much the same thing when he says that theology follows God in the unfolding of historical events. Both these descriptions of the second task of theology converge at the attempt to relate the proclamation of the church to a reality which lies in part, at least, outside of the church. That reality being ultimate reality, however one might perceive that, or the reality of God. The critical factor of this equation is the church, and it is here that we find the major flaw in these two ways of understanding the task of theology. Both interpretation through rational systemization and interpretation through the pursuit of inner logic have been influenced by the racism of the white church. The church, as both the center and subject of churchly theology, has an intimate, though complex, relation to it. And this is precisely why Afro-American systematic theology must ultimately discover its own indigenous way of understanding its relation to the Afro-American churches. The logical place to begin this search is with the question which has been so often put to Afro-American theologians by pastors and others. Does black theology, with its radical assertions about the meaning of the gospel, have anything to do with the proclamation of the churches. Afro-American theology has been accused of devaluing, if not ignoring, the proclamation of the churches. This question and accusation are not new. The persistence of it suggests, however, that it should be taken seriously. The fact that this question arises from within the churches to which most Afro-American theologians belong highlights its importance. Anglo-American theologians have not had to wrestle with this question because one of two situations have prevailed in relation to the church to society. The first situation is that the proclamation of the church has not conflicted with society or prevailing paradigms of reality. The second situation is that the church has had the opportunity to direct its proclamation away from society or the prevailing paradigms of ultimate reality. In either case, the prevailing paradigms of society and ultimate reality were unchallenged. The proclamation of the Afro-American church, circumscribed as it was and is within a hostile societal environment, has had an unavoidable conflictual relationship to that environment. This conflict is reflected and internalized within Afro-American systematic theology as a dissonance between the church and its theology. And it is within this problem of dissonance that the problems of method, structure, and content can be understood. Let me briefly say something about the problem of method within Afro-American systematic theology. This division of theology is concerned with the conflict between Afro-American churches within a hostile white society. That conflict exists not only between the church and society, but is internalized within the churches themselves. Inasmuch as that conflict always threatens to misshape the proclamation of the churches, systematic theology must stand to some degree outside of that proclamation for the purpose of critiquing and redirecting it. To the extent that the proclamation of the churches in society is the source of systematic theology, that theology must stand under the judgment of that church's proclamation. A second structural problem relates to the idea of the church. A central problem for Afro-American systematic theology has been the definition of the black church. At this point, the definitive work in this area has not been done. And I cannot, in the context of this paper, address all the problems attendant to that text. But this will have to be a priority of systematic theology. The definition of the church is crucial to systematic theology's understanding of its own origin. Systematic theology originates within the conscious experience of a group or a race. The problem is that within the racial group is yet another group, the church, the focus of which is both transcendental and immanent. For systematic theology, this problem should be addressed by defining the Christological character of the church and society. The church is that group which claims to be centered around God's revelation in Jesus Christ. And this claim provides the structural integrity of the church so that it may call itself the body of Christ. This claim also provides the relational integrity of the church so that it may call itself the people of God. The problem of structure within Afro-American systematic theology are centered on this issue of the Christological character of the church. The structural problem of the church is the structural problem of systematic theology. The problem of method in systematic theology. Within Euro-American systematic theology, there is an inherent conflict between theological form and content. On one hand, theology is understood as the imposition of form upon the experience of faith. To the degree that that form is conscious and intentional, it is a system. The major objection to system is that it may reflect a purely human and perhaps demonic impulse to control or distort the faith. The system, in other words, may be a product of the theologian's fallen rational faculties. On the other hand, theology is understood as the reproduction of the experience of faith itself. To the extent that that reproduction is faithful to the experience of faith, it is dogmatic. The major objection to dogma is that in its attempt to simply follow the intrinsic direction of the text of faith, it ignores the extent to which such an intrinsic direction depends upon the rational comprehension of order. This conflict, which in abstract terms may be seen as one between reality and faith, is important for Afro-American theology because it provided the original arena for the solution of methodological problems. One could see theology as merely reproductive, as Karl Barth did. Quote, theology is not a creative act, but only the praise of the creator in his act of creation, end of quote. Or one could see theology as essentially constructive, as Gordon Kaufman does, when he states that the authoritarian structure of theology, quote, needs to be replaced by a position which candidly acknowledges the fully constructive character of theology, end of quote. The solution of the problem within Afro-American theology lies in the direction of the reformulation of it within the context of liberation. Liberation from oppression becomes then both the form and the content of theology. That is, liberation constitutes both the formal and the reality of liberation and liberation as the center of the Christian faith. Methodologically, this means that systematic theology is not centered in slavish reproduction or fanciful construction, but rather in deconstruction or transformation of both the inherited religious past and the present experience of faith. This calls for a revolutionary hermeneutics of liberation. The problem of content in Afro-American systematic theology. We could say that the content or subject matter of systematic theology is the story of God's dealings with God's people. This, however, does not dismiss the problem of content, but highlights its difficulty instead. What do we mean by the story of God's dealings? This raises the issue of the distinction between story and plot in Afro-American systematic theology. Here, the distinction relates to canonical stories on one hand and folk stories on the other. The canonical story, what I mean by the canonical story, is essentially the plot structure which a given people construe within the scriptures. Like many biblical stories, its structure is simple but fraught with inexhaustible meaning. Thus, for many Afro-Americans, the canonical story, or that story that they see when they read the Bible, is the story of the liberation of the oppressed. Like the plot of a novel, it is dominated by the element of causality. In this case, however, that causality has a name, God. The events in the canonical story are linked together because they are under God's control and a part of God's creation. The folk story, on the other hand, arises more specifically from the experience of the people themselves. It is the attempt to grasp meaning within experience. It is an imaginative construct through which people make sense of their world. This attempt takes place from within history. So like the story of a novel, time is a problem. In addition, the events within the folk story are not connected through causality, but through inference. Thus, some Afro-American Christians may, through inference, assert that they are moving from bondage to freedom, but this is not necessarily the case. Others may infer that their lives are going from bad to worse. The uncertainty of the folk story is due to the fact that the story is rendered from within time and history. The task of Afro-American systematic theologians is to relate the canonical story with its divine causality to the folk story with its human and time-bound inference. This is essentially what Martin Luther King did in his letter from a Birmingham jail. On a larger scale, the systematic theologian is called to do this through the arrangement and explication of the basic Christian doctrines. From creation to consummation, the theologian is attempting to relate the canonical story to the folk story. Finally, there is the problem of eschatology in systematic theology. For the Afro-American Christian, the canonical story has God as its divine author. Thus, the end of that story is under God's control. A group of escaped slaves could, in that story, become chosen people. However, from within the historicality of one's own experience, the folk story may not promise so radical a reversal. Indeed, one may infer that the troubles of this world would never end. Here, the Afro-American systematic theologian must relate the implied denouement of the canonical story to the unfinished or even contradictory reality of the folk story and of Afro-American life. This implies a degree of alienation from both stories. The theologian cannot be so immersed within the canonical story or the proclamation of the churches that the challenge of the folk story does not come into view. The theologian cannot be so immersed in the folk story or the historical experience of the people that the hope expressed in the canonical story is not seen. The task of the Afro-American systematic theologian in relation to content is to tell both stories at the same time. The problematic of this task is eschatological, because the remainder, you see, of the critical difference between the canonical story and the folk story is this whole business of eschatology and what the end shall be like. And that's where you find the critical relation between the folk story and the canonical story. The content of Afro-American systematic theology is the word of God as group of history and experience. To conclude this section, let us return to the question with which we began. Does black theology have anything to do with the proclamation of the churches? In this brief overview, we have seen that Afro-American systematic theology is indeed related to that proclamation. Yet that relation is not simple. Afro-American systematic theology does not ignore or devalue the proclamation of the churches, but it is not bound by it. There are three reasons for this. In terms of structure, the church itself is the problem of systematic theology. In terms of method, systematic theology must deconstruct both the inherited past or tradition and the present experience of the churches. In terms of content, the systematic theologian must suffer some degree of alienation from both the proclamation of the churches and the historical experience of the people, so that he or she may discern the presence of God through Christ in both. Okay, I'd like to stop here and we could begin some discussion. I think the other points that I'd like to make about the relationship between the genres of African-American theology might be best expressed through discussion and questions and so forth.
The corner responded rather than the other wishes to be made to make it up to the
I promise not to be long. I'd first like to thank Professor Evans for this presentation. It seems to me that he's raised some of the most crucial questions as well as challenges in regard to the future of Afro-American theology. What I'd like to do is to basically attempt to bring to light certain kinds of assumptions and presuppositions that his highly penetrating and provocative presentation evoked in me. The first point I'd like to make is that it seems that Professor Evans is responding to not only the crisis in Afro-American theology, but of course the crisis in theology in general, that we all are familiar with the pluralism, that's the kind of buzzword now that theologians are using in contemporary theological reflection. And if indeed this pluralism is productive rather than paralyzing, then I think we have reason to be optimistic. If indeed it's paralyzing, then it seems as if we ought to look for means by which the set of assumptions and presuppositions that it's tied to circumscribe its capacity to move forward. And I want to suggest the following before I move directly in on the two basic arenas that Professor Evans has set forth, self-examination and proclamation, fundamental theology, and systematic theology. That is the following. Namely, that I think we have to raise the question seriously as to whether both foundational theology and systematic theology, in fact, must come to an end. That is to say, whether we are in a set of historical conditions such that the particular form that religious thinking takes now must be such that it no longer falls back on the set of assumptions which guide and govern the the conceptions of what it is to be, what it is for theology to be foundational, what it is for theology to be systematic. And I think that kind of question, which is indeed a central question, has to be confronted. It seems to me that when we even begin to talk about the very notion of method, that historically the notion of method has been linked to the idea of a discipline being autonomous, being autotelic, having the capacity to stand on its own feet vis-a-vis other disciplines. Another way of talking about it is that it is the master discourse on whatever particular phenomenon one is talking about. And it seems to me in our world, we call it the postmodern world, all modern discourses are suspect. And they're suspect because not only the reality and the phenomena to which they refer is so complex, is so multidimensional and so forth, but also because the very authority to which one has historically appealed, be that authority reason, be that authority revelation or what have you, is itself called into question. That doesn't mean then that one is not going to grapple with that crisis, but one has to characterize the context in which one is trying to come to terms with a theology, be it foundational or systematic, before one presents to what goes on to engage in a constructive project. It seems to me then that theology in general, and Afro-American theology in particular, is going to be responding to what I'm calling this paralyzing pluralism in the following way. On the one hand, it's going to attempt to legitimize itself in the face of the academy, because the academy is involved in the same crisis in the larger sense. We can call it the crisis of humanity, or the crisis of Western culture, however, whatever phrase one wants to talk about. So on the one hand, what are we seeing? We're seeing a move of systematic theologians, foundational theologians, into the academy, which is nothing but a means of legitimizing their particular place within the larger academy as a whole, which of course takes them farther from the church, and in part is itself implicitly an acknowledgement of the end of systematic and foundational theology. You see, it's just that they're not open about it. So Gordon Calvin really doesn't want to do theology. He wishes he was in the philosophy department at Harvard. He doesn't do theology any longer in this regard. And the other side of this, though, that I think is important, those who do, I think like ourselves, still believe there's something about this gospel and something about this faith that is worth talking about and worth taking seriously, is the ghettoization of theological reflection, its inability to say anything pertinent, to be visible and salient in the larger culture. So on the one hand, you have this move toward legitimation in the academy. On the other hand, you have a ghettoization that goes on among theologians, talking among each other, not being able to say the kind of things that they once did, the way in which we once looked for theologians to say something not just about theology, but about the world, about culture, about society, and so forth. We no longer do in this regard. So what then does one do? And I think this is the context in part that Professor Evans has responded to it. I think that it's a fresh response. Let me just make a few remarks about each. I wish you had time to go to that third about social analysis and so forth, but I understand the time limit. But let me say something first then about philosophical or foundational theology and the as a mode of self-examination, the quest for ultimate truth. First point I want to make is that it seems to me that you wavered a bit between ultimate truth and between universal truth. And that to me is a very important difference, because universal truth has a rationalist overtone that I would want to argue is alien to the Christian conception of truth. That is to say that I believe that when Jesus talks about himself as the truth, or when St. John talks about the truth coming into being, that is not a universal truth that floats in the world of Platonic ideality. That is to say, it's a conception of truth that is not only radically historical and radically personal, but it's fleshy, it's worldly, that actually Jesus is the truth. Is that the idea of an abstract universal truth, I would want to argue, is alien to the Christian faith. Now, of course, you were going back and forth. In part, you were invoking the language of Tracy, who's Catholic, and he believes in universal truth and so forth and so on. Whereas myself, the idea of a universal truth, that is to say, the idea of truth understood as a set of propositions that correspond to a state of affairs and so forth, is itself called into question by the Christian tradition. That when Jesus says he is the truth, he's talking about the fleshification of ultimate reality, and therefore propositional forms of truth and abstract versions of truth and what have you are not only subordinate, but they're called into question. That's why in many ways it seems to me the Christian faith is indeed akin to a form of philosophical skepticism. That is to say, claims about truth of tables and chairs and what have you are always evolving because human beings are caught within historical process. So what physicists once said about what a table actually is in 1900 is different than it is now, and it will be different later on. So if they want to say the truth about tables are electrons in 1950, and then they discovered quarks and neutrinos in 1980, and they say that's what the truth really is, it's going to go on and on and on. That's part of our following, that's part of our finitude. Which means what? Which means at that level, the level of scientific propositions, at the level of social scientific propositions, we are locked in a certain sense in a form of skepticism to the degree to which we acknowledge that all such claims will indeed be overridden, will be revised, and so forth. The only truth then is what? An existential truth, not a rationalist truth. A truth that tells us who we fundamentally are as human beings, what we can hope for and what have you, but those are not propositional truths. You see, there are truths that take the form of lived experience, which is, I wouldn't want to argue very different, take a long time to try to distinguish between that. But I think the distinction between existential truth as encountered in one's relation with Christ and rational truth as encountered in discourse, dialogue, and what have you is very, very different. Of course, this is nothing new. Kierkegaard talked about this. Brunner talked about this when truth is encounter, and others have talked about this in relation to the Christian faith. So this is, you know, this is, I'm in no way being original. But I think that's important to know here. The question then becomes, it seems to me, I like what you said about placement and quoting Fesselon, because I think that's true. I think that's a good point. Whether we do it solely in autobiographical mode is a question mark. I think that's the beginning point of doing it, understanding who we are, what are the historical forces that have shaped and molded us, what is our status as religious elites vis-a-vis ordinary black folk in the pew, what is our relation as religious intellectual elites to religious, I'll put it this way, what is our relation as religious traditional intellectuals to religious organic intellectuals, who I would call preachers? How do we relate to one another? And of course, that's a whole story worth telling, you know, that goes on and on, but you have two different elites vying against each other in many ways, as well as fusing under certain contexts. But I would do that as part of the placement process, because I think that's very important. And I think that that the way you raise it is it opens up all kinds of fresh ways of looking at it. Let me end then on talking about the second, systematic or dogmatic theology in relation to the proclamation of churches. The first thing I think we have to say is we have to unpack or flesh out what we talk about when we talk about the proclamation of churches. At this point, it's an abstraction. It's monolithic. Once we historically concretize and begin to talk about different kinds of churches, prophetic, priestly, and what have you, what is the nature of proclamation of prophetic churches, what is the nature of it in priestly churches, and so forth. And then as theologians, after the placement of ourselves, where do we find ourselves vis-a-vis these churches? Yeah. If we view ourselves as prophetic theologians, but we're tied to priestly churches, how do we understand that conflict? How do we get the priestly mode to see that there's something important in what we're saying? And of course, it works the other way, that the priestly does have something to say to the prophetic, because it's the difference between a movement and an institution. Institutions have to survive. Movements can come and go. So then the prophet's always tied to the movement, and a lot of times doesn't want to deal with the day-to-day, nitty-gritty kinds of institutional things.
so it goes back and forth, even though I prefer the prophetic, but still, I understand the limitation of this, and so the back and forth dialogue, I think, is very important. But it's a matter of trying to unpack the proclamation of churches there. The last thing I'll say is, I'm not so sure that in trying to discern the relation between the proclamation of churches to ultimate reality of God, that is necessarily a systematic theological task as opposed to simply a theological task, that the very adjective systematic sits, I don't really like it. I think Christian faith in many ways is radically anti-systematic, and therefore it doesn't lend itself to systematism. Systematic presupposes or privileges notions of coherence, of harmony, of unity, and so forth, whereas I've always understood Christian faith to privilege fragmentedness, given the fall, to privilege discontinuity, disruption, surprise. I mean, that's the nature of the Christ event, that it's a radical discontinuous act in that regard, which means then that we're talking more about a mode of thinking that promotes difference rather than identity. And of course, that's a much larger question in relation to the history of the West, which privileges identity for the most part as a ground for claims rather than difference and otherness. And that relates directly to our situation as black folk, and we're always understood socially, of course, as the other, and therefore pushed out, suppressed, and excluded, and so on. So let me stop there then and see whether we've opened up enough here to generate some kind of discussion.
Well, let me say it. I appreciate Dr. West's critique because he has pointed out some things that I frankly had not thought of in relation to looking at this task. He's also embarrassingly pointed out something that I did think of but could not really resolve in the context of his paper. For instance, the use of the term systematic theology. I use that as a purely heuristic device, just so to call it something. And at this point, for the context of this meeting, I didn't want to create another word for it. So it's something that we all know what we're talking about. But it refers to churchly theology kind of thing. But I do think that there's an ontological significance to names. And using the name will carry some baggage that I'm not prepared to carry at this point. I agree with his critique of those theologians, especially fundamental theologians, who are scurrying to the academies to escape the contradictions of doing theology in the real world. And this is why, instead of relating foundational theology to the practice of theology within an academic context, I tried to start by suggesting that there's an autobiographical approach that is more basic to where black people are coming from than trying to justify it by looking at it in terms of abstract claims, truth, and correspondence to reality, and so forth. Because as I look at it, I think that our understanding of reality as black people has always been filtered towards our struggle to understand who we are as a person, as people, collectively, and simply as members of the human family. And I think if we look at the whole overall task in that way, then I think we have within our own cultural heritage, you see, a structure for making sense of what we are to be about as black theologians. In relation to the comment about pluralism, certainly, I mean, if you read anything in theology nowadays, from not only David Tracy, but Burkhoff and everybody else, trying to figure out what they're going to do about this pluralism in terms of making sense of the theological task. That has been in the back of my mind, but I think that our challenge is something else. I think our challenge is a challenge that comes from within the black community. That is, there are certain submerged questions which have been present in the black community all along from the beginning of the black theology movement. But because of the times, there was really no time to really get into it and start debating all these little in-house kind of things. I mean, there were other more important things to do. But I think perhaps the time has come for us to listen seriously to these questions And I'm talking about the questions that are asked by students within seminaries and universities who are asking, well, what if it's black theology, what does it have to do with, you know, like reality? You know, I mean, what does it have to do with truth? I mean, is it this kind of insular thing? Is it only a black thing? And if it is, how can it relate to the lives of people who don't think exactly the way that I think? The question comes that I've heard a lot, I mean, personally, my own teaching experience from black pastors is, especially Reed Combs, Black Theology and Black Power, the first thing they say, this has nothing to do whatsoever with the proclamation of the black churches. And I think that's a question I have to take seriously. We can dismiss it. I think, but that gives us a key, you see, a starting point to understand our own particular task. And the third question, the question that's asked by no black radicals, asked by radical leftists, and asked by plain old folk in the community, and that is, what does black theology have to do with the socio-political conditions under which I live? And I think that's a legitimate question. I mean, I think we ought to have an answer to that. And I think part of the task for black theologians over the next decade or so is really to do that. Because we don't have the same kind of pluralistic problem, I think, that the white Western community is facing. But I do think that we have a problem in the proliferation in the ways that black people affirm their religions. That is, so you have to pay attention to the fact that Aunt Jane uses a certain kind of language to proclaim her faith. And then, you know, your middle class black corporate executive has some spiritual needs as well, but expresses them in different ways. And there's a variety of contexts. And it's rich. I mean, it's a variety of contexts to which I think we have to respond as black theologians. And so the question I raise in this paper is how do we do that? Where do we get the kind of structure for that? I think that, first of all, let me say something about these three kind of tasks that I've outlined. I don't think that they refer to three different groups of theologians. That's the first thing. Because I agree with Karl Marx on this. I mean, a radical division of labor leads to a radical division of consciousness. So what we will get is people who can't even talk together. And then that's basically what happened with white theology. I mean, you've got fundamental theologians can't even talk to systematic theologians anymore because they haven't dealt with each other's problems. And then systematic theologians can't talk to the practical theologians. So I don't think we're talking about three different groups of theologians. I think we're talking about the three different kinds of contexts in which God is made manifest in our lives. And therefore, I mean that there are God is manifest in our personal lives, in our collective lives as members of churches, and in our lives as members of the human family. So when I talk about a generic principle, genres refer basically to a principle of order. They're not rigid categories, the boundaries are fluid between them, but it is simply a way of understanding a phenomena that continually escapes our own understanding. And I did a basic definition take from literary criticism, but it's just a way of understanding a phenomenon that's constantly expanding and changing. And I think theology and black religious expression is constantly changing and expanding. So when we try to make sense of it, we tentatively lay these kinds of principles of order on it, just in order for us to get a grip on it. So that the genre is our human response to the phenomenon and not an intrinsic character of the phenomenon itself. So when I say that, I mean that the Lord God that we serve is one. But yes, we perceive that God in Trinitarian terms, but that's our human problem. And so that's the problem of God. So, you know, those are some of the kind of concerns that I've been thinking about over the past few months. And I wanted to share them with you here in the context.
Jim, I'm sorry I had to miss the first part of your lecture, but I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask. Did you delineate the difference between Afro-American theology and black theology?
Okay. You know, a student asked me that in class because that word had just kind of crept into my vocabulary. And I had to do some self-psychotherapy to understand why I was using Afro-American theology instead of black theology. And Afro-American theology is black theology. But to tell you some of the things I've been involved in, I've been involved in a group that's been dealing with South Africa. And you know, it occurred to me that that black North Americans don't need to claim black theology solely our own. And so when I talk about Afro-American theology, I'm talking about a variety of black theology. Because you know, South Africans call what they do black theology as well. And I suppose that a lot of people throughout the world do. So I think basically the difference boils down to me trying to be specific. Because you see, some of the principles that I use in trying to understand this theology are drawn from the specifically Afro-American experience. Therefore, when I talk about the autobiographical context, I'm talking about the autobiographical context of Afro-American slave experience in America, which is probably different from the experience of the African in Brazil. And therefore, his experience might look a little different, and his theology might come out looking just a little different. So I don't want to claim to set the agenda for theology for all persons of African descent throughout the world. So that's basically it, an attempt to be more precise in what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yes?
When you go to Africa, South Africa, or any of the continental Africa, you get a land dimension in theology that is not primitive in America. Mm-hmm. The Afro-American experience lacks the land dimension. And it took me a long time to find out what the Indians were fussing about when they settled with the land and offered them a certain amount of money. Good money. But they were not satisfied and they kept talking about the land. You took the land.